And we'll be getting started right about now, I figure. Let's go ahead and play some intro music, shall we? Surreal Poetiques, a very special, completely 100% unscripted episode of Surreal Poetiques, ladies and gentlemen. I sent out an email earlier today with a snippet from a monologue that I was working on, and I'll talk about that more in a minute, but long story short, it's not done, okay? I sent out what I sent out, planning to have it done by the time we got here tonight, and that just wasn't going to happen, and I think that the message in that monologue is important enough that I don't try to rush it or do half of it tonight. So we're not going to do that monologue. We're going to do something completely different. Am I being told that the actor who played Anthony Soprano in The Sopranos is dead? Am I hearing that from the Odyssey chat? Well, that's a terrible shame. I wonder who whacked him. That's a dumb joke, of course. But anyway, the thing I sent out, I titled the episode Drive today, and I'm probably going to, where I can rename the episode, I'll probably do that. Because I want to come back to that title for what I was working on. I basically, over the weekend, I started republishing, I'll start a little further back. When I get out of prison, I decided I wanted all my stuff gone. I wanted all my, James Gandolfini died a long time ago. That's right. Okay. So, I got to have to mourn now. I'm kidding. When I got out of prison, I wanted to remove all my old stuff from the website. I expected that I was going to re-meet deplatforming efforts as I was trying to get a new business off the ground. And I knew that there were things on that website that our enemies had collected over the years that they'd just go right there and be like, yeah, here's the proof that this guy can't have access to dollars or telephones, right? And so I said, let me just get all this stuff down. It's more trouble than it's worth, you know. It's not like, you know, Google's already buried me in the damn search results. It's not like it's driving traffic to the website. Get rid of it. And I figured that sometime in the near future, I'd pour over all this stuff or get somebody else to pour over it. And we'd make select works available, but not the entire catalog. Here we are, you know, 15 months later, basically, and that hasn't been done. So I'm like, all right, you know, I got to get this done, you know. And I've been trying to figure out a way to try to make the, you know, the subscription payment for surrealpolitics.com/join a more appealing option for people. And more content is obviously one way to do that. And I have, you know, thousands of audio and thousands of pages of text. Might as well make those things available to people who are willing to pay $10 a month for it. Seems like a reasonable enough thing to try to do. I was kind of annoyed by doing this because it's like, you know, my conception of this is that, you know, I have a unique talent and that talent should be applied to the things that only that talent can do. You know, if I had a real operation here, I would not do things that can be done by other people. The way that talent succeeds, I've talked about before, is that you have teams of people making that person succeed. The talent isn't successful. The people around organizing the talent and managing it, they're the people who make it successful. And I'm very frustrated by that, and I don't complain about it, but I do in my own head, and I have to try to suppress that, okay? But this was a thing that needed to be done, and I put it off for too long, so I just went ahead and did it, or started to do it, okay? So now the entire Some Garbage podcast catalog is now available on ChristopherCantwell.net, and you can get that with your SurrealPolitiques.com membership login, okay? You get that, you get SurrealPolitiques, you get ChristopherCantwell.net, you get FullHouseMembers.com. You may already know that the purpose of the Surreal Politiques project is to bring more people under that network, okay? And so you've got every episode of Some Garbage Podcast, except for episode 7, which is like the lost episode. We'll talk about that before the end of the show today. We've got the entire catalog of Outlaw Conservative is also at ChristopherCantwell.net. We've got the first 50-something episodes of of Radical Agenda are up. And I'll make many more of those available in the coming days. When I was doing the Radical Agenda episodes, that's a tedious process because the Radical Agenda episodes link to other things within the blog. The show descriptions link to other pages. And so one of the things that I did as I was going through the Radical Agenda episodes was making sure that the links all worked. Okay, so in addition to the first 50-something Radical Agenda episodes, you've got dozens and dozens of my old blog posts are now available at ChristopherCantwell.net. This was kind of tedious in some part because when we moved, the website is no longer on the server that it was when I was in prison. I had to move all that stuff, and sort of the way that we did this, putting it on the network website, some of the images didn't transfer over correctly, and I have to fix those, but that's a technical thing I'm not going to describe in great detail. Most of the posts, you'll see the images along with it. There are a bunch of posts in there that say, I need to fix broken image links. Remind me if it's not done by the end of April. But this was largely mindless work, you see. Okay, so like, while I'm clicking on things in a manner that I could, you know, train a robot to do, my mind is allowed to wander, I should say. And my irritations with the situation get me to thinking about being discouraged, all right? And as we've been talking, you know, at some length about, like, I would say broadly we could say that we've been talking about success, okay? There's a character on the internet who's doing a lot of whining about women, and that irritates me in ways that, you know, extend far beyond that individual. But we've talked about it in other contexts, too, whether it's politics, you know, people being like, oh, we've got to go burn the system down, you know, whatever it is, okay? People get black-pilled about politics, and they either get unrealistic ideas or they want to give up, whatever it is. You know, people complain about money, whatever it may be. And the idea that's, you know, in my head when I'm going through this is like, you are, when you're in a situation where, like, you're failing, okay, where things are not working out as you need them to work out, you know, you have to do something to turn that around, even if it's to put smaller wins on the board, is what I'm getting at, okay? Like, you know, I wanted to get this thing done in a grander fashion than I did. I wanted to have, you know, I overestimated the amount of support that I would have to do these projects, and I'm like, oh, I'll get, you know, volunteers to pour over all this stuff, and that did not materialize. And so I'm like, all right, this has to get done. I'm just going to go republish it, and I'll just do it in roughly chronological order, and if I see something that stands out as a problem, then I'm just going to remove it. And sure enough, now there's, like, you know, hundreds of hours of fresh to many of you on the website, you know. And that's a small win on the board, and that's huge, okay? When I talked on the prior Uncensored production about, like, the dating stuff, one of the things I said is something that some people would probably disagree with, which is like, go meet women that you're not going to marry, and if you feel like having sex with them, go ahead and do it when the opportunity presents, okay? And I'm glad that I didn't get a bunch of people screaming at me in an audience revolt about that, but I thought I might. You know, there's the slang term is slump buster, okay? Like, you could go have a slump buster for any number of things. If you're not getting laid, go bang this fat single mom and, like, regain your confidence that your junk works, you know? I have done that as a way to feel better about myself on my path to go accomplish greater things, all right? And we touched on this in the prior Uncensored production that, like, you know, when a man approaches a woman with confidence, you know, he approaches other things in his life with confidence too. And it's not just that he's a confident guy. It's like one thing feeds into the other. If you're not winning, you know, then like that hurts, right? You're discouraged by the thing. And if you keep on getting knocked down, you know, that's going to inform your ability to basically visualize the win, you know. So that's the gist of, you know, what I wanted to try to get at. I have a lot more to say about it, but I wasn't able to complete the monologue today because I just kept going to get knocked down today. I shouldn't even say get knocked down. I kept on getting distracted, like, you know, trying to do those things. Like, I need to sit in front of this computer and I have to think about nothing but that. And if I have, you know, things beeping at me all day, whatever they happen to be, I mean, there's going to be beeps, you know, the phone notifies me every time I get an email, there's 100 of these things coming in an hour, you know, for automated purposes, but there was a lot going on today that I just wasn't going to be able to finish the monologue in time, and so I haven't. But I do have, I'm going to play a listener voicemail for you. I do have the phone lines are online, of course, at 202, I'm sorry, that's the voicemail number, 217-688-1433. And before I play the voicemail, I'm going to note that there's a couple of things that I actually want to respond to in here, but part of the reason that I'm playing this is it's an example of how not to leave a voicemail, okay? When you leave me a message on 202-599-7386, you have 3 minutes to make your point. That's longer than you're ever going to have calling into a broadcast radio show to make your point, okay? You want to call into conservative talk radio, you want to call into a comedy show, you want to call into any radio broadcast, you are not going to have 3 minutes to make your point. You need to learn how to, like, understand what you're going to say before you pick up the phone and then say it so that you can, like, maximize the impact of your words. And I'm not saying that to pick on this guy. It's a thing that you need to learn. It's an important skill for you as a radio listener. It's an important skill for you as a politically aware person. It's an important skill for you in any number of endeavors that you can walk up to somebody and say what you mean and communicate a point in under 3 minutes. And if you can't do that, you lack a very important life skill and you need to work on it. Okay? I'm not picking on this guy. But I'm going to critique his voicemail in the capacity of a voicemail, and then I'm going to respond to some of the things he says as we go forward.
Hey, Chris. Good evening. This is Sean from Montana. It's Sunday, about almost 1 a.m.
It's also the year 2024. If I want to know what time you left the voicemail, Google is going to tell me. You just costed yourself seconds.
But I'm calling because... Actually, I'm roughly in bed here, and I've been working on some stuff, and I've been thinking about your whole monologue from Friday, and I appreciated your monologue from Friday, but I really just wanted to call and give you my two cents and see if this makes sense. But I really respect your whole background because you're from New York, you're in New Hampshire, so you definitely do have that whole right conservativeness to you, but your monologue talking about, you know, MGTOWs as the new feminists, that's basically a leftist ideology, which can be similar to a libertarian.
Okay, so now we're 1 minute into this voicemail, And that's how much the guy's gotten across of his point. Do you understand what he's trying to communicate to me? No, you don't. We have no idea what this voicemail is about 1 minute into it. If you ever tried to call into a radio show and talk to somebody like that, you would not get past the call screener. You would not get anywhere with that call. And so, like, if you can't, you know, I'm talking about a 3 minute voicemail. I'm willing to give you that much if you're leaving a voicemail. But, like, you were a minute in, and we have no idea what the call's about.
Ideology, right? There are libertarians who are leftists, and there are libertarians who are rightists, right? Then, you know, I would think you'd have more, you know, right-leaning libertarians in New England versus more left-leaning libertarians in, you know, the Northwest. Even though I've lived all over the country and I've definitely witnessed a lot of different ideologies and paths, and I guess leanings one or the other, you know. I want to bring this up because your monologue started off with this whole, you know, left versus right thing, and then went into the whole dating scene, and it seemed a little bit shallow to me because your dating advice went from everything about haircuts to vehicles to wardrobes to flossing to all this stuff. And it's really, I've been seeing this in a lot of other groups lately. There's a lot of people who are very...
I'm going to pause this here. I paused the audio recording by mistake because I went to Audacity to do this. Yes, sir. When I was talking about how to attract a woman, I was talking about very shallow things in large part because that's how you attract a woman, right? You're making superficial changes in your appearance, you know, to the extent that you can, because those are the easiest things to do, right? The easiest things that you can do are brush your hair and change your shirt, you know? And so, like, and they're also the front-facing things, okay? There are obviously deeper things that you need to do to be successful in a romantic relationship. But the issue that I'm responding to is people who think that they can't attract a woman. And if people believe that, you know, there's like, you know, am I being told that Rumble's not working? Oh, great. Great, great, great. I can't believe this crap. I have completely had it with this nonsense. Oh, is it about to work now? Well, after I get done with a minute and a half of commercials, we'll find out if Rumble's going to play my stupid video. Thank you very much. Oh, God. You know, Rumble, you need to allow the producer to see if the video's playing when the stream starts, okay? You can't make me watch 2 minutes of commercials before my stream starts. Unbelievable. And so whatever the hell Rumble's been doing, I have a fraction of the viewership there that I should, because apparently it didn't start right away, but now it's working. Anyway, so if you're trying to attract a woman, you're going to do some shallow things, and God bless you for doing it. You know, people who think, like, you know, if you look at situations and say, like, that's too simple or that's too shallow, like, appearances matter. All of the stuff that deep thinkers dismiss as superficial constitute the vast majority of other people's impressions of you, as a matter of fact, right? If you're a person who is of a pure soul and you can't put your shirt on straight, if you think that you're a very virtuous person and your breath smells, like, you're going to have major problems in the dating market, you know? If you are a person who thinks that you do all the most important things in the world and yet you're a belligerent idiot on Telegram, like, you're not going to have success socially, much less with women. And so, like, you need to pay attention to presentation. Like, and that's political, too. I'll actually borrow a line from this thing, okay? No, I'm not going to do it. If you're not paying, if you're dismissing these superficial, shallow things, then you're going to fail, because that's how most people perceive you. That's the most important thing at the end of the day. It actually is more important than the substance, so far as the realpolitik is concerned. All right. I am of the view that the substance ultimately matters more, but the substance gets nowhere without the superficial thing. And I'm going to get into that more in a second, because you're about to talk about something else that touches on this.
Caught up in the idealistic viewpoint of things versus the realistic viewpoint, which is, it seems like you have been very idealistic at times in your past, but it seems like your monologue on a Friday was a very just realistic, straight to the point viewpoint, which I very respect. But I think in today's day and age, there's a lot of men who are thinking about the whole, you know, MGTOW or celibacy or, I guess, libertarian in a left-leaning viewpoint, because our society is kind of f***ed up. And then you have some of these right-wingers who are just like, oh, okay, those are the losers who either can't find a woman or who are...
And now he has run out of time. That's the 3 minutes that he had to make his voicemail. He wasted most of it talking about things that had nothing to do with the point. I'm still not sure what his point was. But here's where he was when he got cut off by the 3 minute time limit. There's a realistic and an idealistic camp. Nobody gets anywhere unless those two things converge. Okay? That's the whole entire point of surreal politics. All right? That was the conclusion that I reached a long time ago. And as a matter of fact, you know what I'll do? Give me a second. I'm going to pull this up. This is actually worth doing. I'm going to pull up the opening monologue from the first episode of The Radical Agenda, is what I'm going to do. It just strikes me in this moment. But I realized it when I was reading the thing. Radical Agenda, Episode 1, Patriots Day. So I'm going to just read this thing all the way through, and I'll comment on it when I get to the point that I'm actually looking for, okay? On April 19th, 240 years ago, some agents of the British government came to confiscate weapons from American colonists. This did not pan out too well for them, as when they approached the rebel weapon stocks, they were fired upon by said rebels. I'm sure Tom Woods can give you a better history lesson, so I won't spend a great deal of time on that part of this. In any case, while the American experiment in limited government surely spiraled into mankind's most catastrophic failure to date, the romanticism that surrounds the American Revolution is not entirely unjustified. A relatively small number of people produced some of those prolific writings about liberty in human history and fought off an empire that was largely perceived to be invincible. They established a government and a constitution which, however flawed, did lead to a lessening of restrictions which gave us the greatest advancements in human knowledge, philosophy, and technology ever. On Friday, I announced that there would be some rebranding of Some Garbage Podcast and ChristopherCantwell.com. You notice my tagline at the top of this website. I'm going to use the word a-hole here in a second. I'm just going to say whatever. My tagline in the top of this website had a-hole replaced with abolitionist. So my tagline on ChristopherCantwell.com used to be anarchist, atheist, a-hole. Okay? And at that moment, I replaced it with abolitionist. Some Garbage Podcast is now The Radical Agenda. This led some to be concerned I would be toning down the message, that by eliminating the self-deprecating marketing tactics of the past, I might also moderate my message for the future. While I have little use for patriotism or patriots, I think Patriots Day is a great opportunity to alleviate their fears by launching The Radical Agenda with a discussion centered around the violent overthrow of government, the necessary culture of resistance, and the tragedy that is the libertarian movement's trajectory in the opposite direction. Perhaps we ought to make some mention of the lunacy that occurred 2 years ago at this time, when the people who live in the same area these battles took place cheered for the martial law on their streets in the name of finding a 19-year-old boy with a crock pot. Evidence enough that minarchy plus time equals tyranny. So join me this Sunday, April 19th of what year was this? This was 20... What's the date on here? 2015, from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, for the first of many episodes of The Radical Agenda, a show about common sense extremism. We will continue to air in the Friday 5 to 7 p.m. time slot where some garbage podcasts used to, and eventually decide on a regular airing time for a second weekly episode. And so... there was a specific part of this that I was looking to get at, and it actually escapes me in the moment. But the idea that I have here, anyway, my idea at that time was some garbage podcast is basically making a joke of itself, okay? And I need to do something that does not do that, all right? And the radical agenda began in an equally misguided direction, as a matter of fact, okay? To launch episode one being like, hey, let's begin by committing a federal felony and advocating the violent overthrow of government is actually a very unwise thing to do, in fact. But at least I realized it wasn't a joke anymore. You know, I tried to make the show funny and entertaining, but, you know, it was time to start taking things a little bit more seriously, say. So, we're unscripted, folks, if you're just tuning in. I scrapped my monologue for today, and I've been off on sort of a tangent here. But, here's where I was trying to go, okay? There's no separation between the idealistic and the realistic if you want to succeed. If the idealistic side is hostile to the realistic, then you have a nonsense ideology, okay? And if the realistic side is, you know, has no idealism behind it, then what's the purpose of it? If you have idealistic factions which are hostile to reality, you get nowhere. If you have hyper-pragmatic factions that have no ideals, then you have no purpose. The wanton pursuit of, you know, power. It's, you know, self-aggrandizement is all there is to it, right? Neither one of those things is acceptable to me. And that's really the thrust of the idea behind Surrealpolitik. It's like, if you have an ideological goal, then you better find a realistic means by which to implement it. Radical Agenda Episode 1 was not that means, okay? I'm some guy in an apartment in Keene, New Hampshire, talking about we're gonna fight the United States government. Well, that's stupid, right? It's amazing somebody as smart as me could say something that dumb, but I did. That's your idealistic being hostile to the realistic. And at that, I seemed all the more realistic than a lot of my associates, right? You had a lot of these free staters were like, okay, we're going to abolish the government with hugs and kisses. You know how we're going to fight the state guys? We're all going to have the same girlfriend. You know how we're going to stop tyranny, guys? We're going to smoke marijuana. Because marijuana makes people love each other. And therefore, you know, all of our problems will be solved by drugs. And so with ideas that dumb pervading, you know, maybe I could be pardoned for having some misguided ideas of my own. And though it took me a little while to figure it out, you know, I'm glad to know what I know now. I would love to have learned it a lot easier, but, you know, such as what it is. Now, we have the caller who left the voicemail. Now, sir, I'm very glad to have you on the line. I hope you don't feel that I treated you too unfairly. If I've misunderstood your point or not gotten your point, I'm happy to hear it. But I'll hope that you'll be able to get it out to me in less than 3 minutes.
Yeah, hey, sorry about that message. That was long. But, yeah, I basically was having a debate that same night, and I got super depressed because there was no answer. And I think this is a great topic just with the election season and just men in our group. Because it's the way that you put it is actually good, though. It's a balance, and I would be lying to myself if I'm saying, oh, like, because, like, if my dating's failing and I'm going to one to the idealism side or more to the realism side, I'd be lying to myself if I said I didn't want that kind of will to power like you're talking about, because we all kind of have that in it could be a large sense or a small sense, right, in any type of spectrum there. So, yeah.
I think that, you know, it's not even so much a balance. These things need to be in harmony, right? And if they're not in harmony, if they need to, you know, you take one, I take one, then they're in conflict, right? The realistic, if your ideas are any good, they shouldn't be in conflict with the realistic is kind of my idea, you know? And that's not perfectly articulated. I'm not, and probably not a dispute of what you're saying either. That's all I had in my head.
I know that you might think you're like a Chad, and you probably are compared to a lot of, people, I guess, in this movement, because you've been out there doing stuff and got yourself kind of in trouble, but then you're still kind of sticking to your idealism, what you're talking about. But I mean, I think for most men that are in that 20-30 age group, the dating scene has just been, for me personally, just tearing my heart out, tearing my wallet out, and it's something where I think you're right. At a point that we kind of have to level ourselves. If we're just going to go to that fat single mother, then sure. But there's going to be problems with that. And does she want to have kids with me? So ideally, it would be great to be a conservative Mormon and have 5 white children with a white woman, but the way that the situation is, especially on the East Coast, I mean, it does come down to politics as well, and then that goes into the whole, you know, socio-political kind of like crayon that you're getting at. So those are all kind of tied in, but
my experience with the dating market post-prison is I'm not in it, okay? Like, I don't have a girlfriend. Like, I'm suffering in loneliness is honestly what I'm doing, okay? And the reason that I'm doing that is because I understand that with the demonstrable social status that I currently possess, that the type of woman that I would get to date me right now is not the type of woman I'd want to marry, okay? And I was approached by a woman, I've told this story on here before, that, like, When I first get out of prison, I'm approached by a woman who had rejected my marriage proposal years ago, and she was older than me. And she, you know, I jump into bed with her, happy as hell to have a woman as soon as I get out of prison. And we get emotionally wrapped up, and I'm realizing, like, wait a second, this is, I can do better than this, and I'm going to have to break up with this woman. I'm falling in love with her. She's falling in love with me. This is a disaster, right? And I broke it off with her, and I broke her heart, and it really upset me. It made me feel like crap. I wanted to eat a gun. And so I'm like, I'm not doing that, okay? And so, you know, I understand from prior times in my life that, like, at other times in my life, I went on those dating apps and I met women all the time and I had sex with them all the time. And I was intentionally avoiding any, like, emotional attachment to them. I was like, yeah, there's no way that I'm going to be like your boyfriend. No, like, I'll have sex with you. We'll hang out. I'll even like you, right? I'll be seen with you in public, whatever. But, like, there's no way I'm making any commitment to you because I'm going to sleep with other women. That's what I did for most of my sexually active life. And then at the age of, like, 36, I'm like, what have I done? You know, I'm like, what? I've completely ruined my life is the idea that I get in my head as a consequence of all that behavior. It's only then that I start thinking about, you know, I've got to find a wife and have kids. I'm going to leave behind nothing. And so, like, you know, And then I had a bunch of disasters and ended up in prison. So, like, when people talk about, like, hardships in the dating market, like, you know, it's not that I'm without sympathy for that position. I have all the sympathy in the world.
Yeah.
The idea that somebody can't attract a woman, this is what I hear people complaining, that they can't attract a woman. Well, you actually can, okay? So if you're going out and you're betting women and you can't find one that you want to keep, there's a tragedy involved in that. You can blame cultural things. And I'm not saying that you're saying this, but the people who are saying that they can't attract a woman, they need to change their behavior, because that's obviously possible.
Yes, I agree. We need to change ourselves, definitely, and work on ourselves as much as we can. But I just one last, like, I think this main question leads onto the point where as far rightists or white nationalists or just thinking white, like, pretty much good men in America, there's a big divide in this scene about if men should only stick with white women. And I agree, though, like, ideally, yes, we would want white families, but the realistic point of view is that there are so many available Hispanic and Asian women who are more of that traditionalist sense. So if we're looking for a trad white woman, it's definitely very difficult unless we become Mormons. Because I've been in that community, and if you want to do that, sure, great, let's all do that. But most of us, there's going to be more of the group in that non-white trad group. So is that just something that's totally taboo? Because when I had a debate, I basically was shunned by all the white nationalists saying that I'm a loser. And I'm like, so, okay, there's no Aryan woman at all who are Thai or El Salvadorian or what? Like, you know?
Well, let me start here. I have a very confident doubt. I don't know, that's probably a contradiction of terms, but I am certain as I can be about the speculation I'm about to make, I have that much certainty that none of the people who say they can't find a white woman are going to church every Sunday. Okay? They're not doing things that put them into contact with the type of people that they want to meet. They're doing white nationalism. That's what they're doing. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, in order to pursue my white nationalism, I'm going to have to go marry a Latina. And this is nonsense, right? Like, that's actually nonsense. Now, it has come up on here before, and I've been kicked off of other radio networks for it and other platforms for saying, guys call into my show and they tell me I'm in love with so-and-so. And I'm like, well, you're in love. You got to do what you got to do, you know. But, like, what are you trying to accomplish? If what you're trying to accomplish is to go meet a white woman and marry her, like, there's things that you do to do that. You go and you participate in wholesome activities that attract the type of people that you're wanting to marry. If you're hanging out in bars in Harlem, guess who you're going to be meeting? It's not going to be a bunch of white women who go to church. You want to meet white women who go to church, you go to church.
Yeah. Okay, yes. So we're back to the conservative church, Trump-voting, gun-toting, white American male.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Tell me what you think is in what you think is the falsity and or the in what is the problem with the strategy that I just described, other than attributing it to this, you know, archetype character.
Right, right. The architect character is usually the Chad white nationalist who is definitely not even over 50% of people in this movement. I mean, most of them are normal white men who work, but I'm not saying, like, if you're a white nationalist, I mean, there's a lot of, like, Asian women who I've met and women from, like, South America who totally understand that, and they're more traditional, so if it's readily explained, they're going to understand, oh, wow, this isn't, you know, an irrational behavior. This makes total sense. And that's, they're going to like me for me about who I am, not just because of some, you know, they're going to say, oh, well, you're anti-Semitic or you're, you know, anti-feminist or whatever, right? There's definitely more white Western women who totally get triggered by that shit. So, excuse my language. That's kind of what I'm getting at. So I have had a bit of defeatist attitude over the past like few years, but it's been getting, I'm in my early 30s now, so it's basically just, okay, whatever the noise is, I don't care if it's the left that thinks this about me or the right that thinks that about me, just work on whatever I can do, and that's it. And not get, you know, drunk as much as I was in the past. That's basically, you know, working on health and all those other facets, the physical, spiritual that we talk about. So, right, and you seem like you have, you know, a rational mindset. It's fun calling in because it's sort of helping answer those questions as we go along in this political season that's confusing in itself, right?
I appreciate deeply this phone call, my friend. And so, like, here, what you just described to me is, okay, you know, that this is a rational behavior or a sensible behavior with men met with these circumstances. Well, yeah, it is. That's the whole entire point of setting up the incentives that way, is to get you to follow the incentives so that your race will go extinct. That's how the genocide works, okay? And so, like, you have, if you want to try to counteract that, then the only, and I'm not saying you have to, by the way, okay? You are under no obligation to do that. But if your goal is to, you know, to act contrary to the genocide, then you actually do have to go against the incentives that have been set for you by the people who are trying to destroy your existence, right? And so if you know, if by the circumstances of your life you fall in love with a Latina, if you fall in love with a Negress, I'm not going to tell you not to marry her and have babies with her. I'm not going to be a guy who does that. I will not do that. I'm too much of a romantic, okay? But if you're now in a position where you're not in that situation and you're trying to plan for your future, and I say, well, if you want to meet a nice white girl, you should probably go to church more often. And then you say, yeah, but it's easier to marry a Latina. Okay, yeah. You know, if you want to do the easier thing, then do that. I'm not sure that it will be easier in the long run. You know, I have a pretty horrific story about a Dominican girl. these things are not, you know, these are not cost-free, unalloyed goods that you're talking about. We're just, you know, you go and you trade in your white nationalist card and thereby get yourself a Latina wife. Like, it actually doesn't work that way, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it seems like the best thing would just be, you know, go back to the Mormon community, and they have the kind of incognito white nationalist thing. And there's a lot of single kind of women in their, you know, 30s and even 40s who were previously married or who just are, you know, not the caliber that a white nationalist would think he is, because a lot of us think that we're actually Chads when we're actually not. So there's plenty of women that I turned down that I dated when I was in my, you know, mid to late 20s working in D.C. and then I was in Utah, and I was like, oh, I can get a hotter white woman than that. But they were probably very fertile, good family females, right? I thought I was a 7 or 8 when I'm really a 4 or 5, and they were probably 4 or 5s at that time, right? So it's like, I mean, and then I thought the, you know, white nationalists about Mormonism, and they're like, oh, well, they're all feds and all psyops, don't go near Mormons. But that's probably my answer if I really wanted to get back in the church scene. But
I don't know that you need to go to the Mormons. You know, I whether you come from a Catholic or a Protestant tradition, I'm sure there's other churches than the Mormons where there's, you know, where there's non-prostitutes in the pews, you know. And so, like, this is the thing that I, you know, it just makes me laugh. Okay, and I don't know anything about your life, so understand that this is not a mockery of you. I've got a specific person in mind who becomes a caricature in my head of a phenomenon I see from anonymous accounts on the internet all day, okay? I have to, you know, I moderate comments on a white nationalist platform, so you can imagine the stuff that I have to deal with all the time. And so, like, you know, I'm left in my own head, I'm filled up with this image of, which, by the way, I think a lot of this stuff is like ChatGPT subversive activity, by the way. I think that they're trying to spread hopeless narratives is a lot of what this is. I don't think I'm banning human beings when I ban people from my comments for being problems. I think it's literally AI is what I think is going on. And so, you know, some portion of it anyway. I'm sure that there's some genuine people who have been misguided and repeat the behavior, but I think that's the origin of it. And so, like, you have people who come around that, you know, every other word out of their mouth is a swear word, and they drink alcohol, and they openly on social media talk about how bad women are, and they think that the most important thing in their life is their despised political movement, And then they're like, oh, my social life sucks. That is not a difficult to explain phenomenon, if to the extent that it's a real thing. Okay. If you're engaged in antisocial behavior and you're spouting unpopular ideas and you can't keep your mouth shut about those ideas until you win somebody over, then like it's actually the entirely appropriate response of the normal people in society to reject you. And your behavior has to change to fix that. And that's more important if you have an interest in saving your race by perpetuating it and not going and having children with somebody else. But it's actually like important even if you do want to go grab yourself a Latina wife, right? Like if you have a Latina wife and every time you meet somebody, you're like, let me tell you about how terrible those Jews are, you know, and your breath stinks and you're drunk, like, you know, that's not going to work out. Like, it doesn't matter who, you know, it doesn't matter if you go to South America and buy a sex slave, you know, like it actually matters. The things that are preventing people from accomplishing what they say their goals are going to prevent them from accomplishing other goals too. And they're not going to be better off by going and inviting, you know, the problems of ethnic diversity into their marriage.
Yep, yeah, this goes back to the idealism versus realism. But I totally agree with you. And that's why I think COVID's or whatever, I don't want to say the whole word on the phone here, but it was kind of like a 9/11 in a sense, because I feel like at that point, I sort of became an incel, and this was in my late 20s, and a lot of people, I think, were going down the same path, where those few years kind of made the far rightest white nationalists into incels, really, if we look at it. I mean, I know that's kind of
I need you to stop for a second. Are you saying that the COVID phenomenon, did you call it COVIDs, and then you went into talking about that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, this from a psychological viewpoint, it was kind of like a 9/11 psychologically. If you look at how it affected white men in this age group in the far right, I mean, it's sort of in general, it's because a lot of this is just like a digital, you know, warrior movement, right? So if you really look at it, it's kind of like you're saying, it has that kind of reverse mentality where if you're spewing that stuff, it's just going to then become a part of you. And then when you go back into normal society socialization, it's just going to be like, ooh, okay, do I really fit into that? And does it really work with my idealism? Right? So there's a lot of philosophy there. But I get, like we were saying, it's a good balance of those things.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, I don't begrudge anybody who's, you know, anybody who, through the circumstances of their life, falls in love with somebody, just go ahead and do it, okay? You know, you put boys and girls in a room together, that's going to happen. And that's why we want a sane immigration policy, right? To prevent that from occurring. And so, like, the immigration policy happened. Now that's the circumstances with which we are met. And, you know, certain nature is going to take its course to some extent. But, you know, all I'm saying is, like, whatever it is that, you know, and again, I don't know anything about your life, but for people who are finding themselves that, like, their social life isn't working out, like, you can lower your standards, you know, to say, you know, take on a white girl who's got a few more pounds, which is actually like not a bad idea, since if you're doing things right, you're going to knock her up repeatedly and you're going to wreck that body anyway, you know. Go ahead, you know.
Especially thinking about, you have mixed kids, right? It's like, think about how they're going to fit in the society, like how it's going to, like what category they're going to be. And we want someone who's going to be like some of these sports ball players who are like, you know, some of them say they're black, but they're white. Some say they're white, but they're black. They're like mixed. It's like, that's kind of what this you guys system, I think, yeah, wants, right? They want to kind of replace all those types of whiteness, right? It's just mixed. It's like, think about that too. It's like, I don't know. Maybe in other countries it might work, like South America. If you know, knock up a Hispanic, they'll be just more white, and they'll be in a Hispanic country. Yeah, sure. Or in Asia, right? They love some of those, you know, like mixed European Asian. Like, there's a lot of actors and stuff like that. So maybe there, but I mean, here it's just kind of coming to commonplace. So it's like, maybe they'll even fit in better. You know, if you look at some of the statistics of just the, you know, the kids now and like middle school and stuff, like a lot of these like numbers, a lot of them are just getting more mixed, more you know, even more mixed than even just straight black or Hispanic, right? So it's like, yeah, that's the way of America if you look at it. I mean, not everywhere, but mostly suburban. A lot of suburban. It's not just the cities, you know, guys. It's a lot of the suburbs. But, yeah, it's, yeah, it's back to the whole maybe antisocial talk, right, if we start bringing up negativity. But, I mean, negativity is a lot of facts, too. So it's like...
Well, yeah, you know.
I guess I'm just saying that
go ahead.
On pussy and money, I'll be good, though. That's it.
All right, buddy.
I think about the time.
I appreciate the call, my friend. Thank you very much for it, and call back anytime. 217-688-1433 if you'd like to be on the program. If you don't call in the next 6 minutes, I'll end the show after that. You know, I'm glad that guy called in because it gave me an ability to sort of like shoot it back and forth with somebody. You know, that voice in your head that tells you that you're a loser and you can't win is a problem, you know, and you don't want that to become your voice, you know. That was the closing line of the email that I put out there, okay? I say here, failure, though a valuable learning experience, can become a downward spiral because of this. Trying entails investment. You have a limited amount of energy to invest. Invest it poorly and you will need a bigger payoff from future investments. This can lead to risk-taking and even more catastrophic failure. There's a Bible passage that touches on this. Matthew 25:29 reads, per the King James Version, "For unto everyone that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath." Okay, so if you've got, you know, more is going to come to you. And if you don't have, even that little bit that you have is going to be taken from you. And you see this all the time. The modern cliche is the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. And this is often thrown about as a condemnation of corruption or capitalism or modernity or white supremacy, name your boogie band. But it is a recognition of our natural state. Success begets success, and absent intelligent direction, failure begets failure. If you're losing, set lower goals and win. Like, get wins on the board. And I don't care what they are or how small they are, start winning, okay? Do something smaller, feel that accomplishment, and try to aim for things that bring you up another step. If you go out and you complain, oh, I can't find a woman, I can't find a job, I can't win politically, everything sucks, you're not defeating that voice, you're becoming it, you know? You need to silence that lying SOB and not be his megaphone, all right? Listen for, like, warning signs about future failures and, like, learn lessons from the pain of prior failures. But do not be the guy who's screaming on the street corner that the sky is falling. That's not good for you. That's definitely not good for the people around you. And the people who do that as like their full-time job or their hobby, they're not helping anybody, okay? There's a very limited number of circumstances where blackpilling is helpful. There are certain people who, if you reach them and you can grab them sufficiently and be like, hey, slap them across the face and be like, look at what's going on in all of its horror. And that person sees it, internalizes it, and is motivated by it, great. But that guy is a tiny, tiny, tiny minority. Almost everybody will reject you for doing that to them because for the simple fact that you have made them unhappy. And happiness is their perfectly reasonable goal in life. And so if you're complaining, it doesn't matter if your complaints are legitimate, as a matter of fact. Shut up. Shut up. So what I said about my parents and the dedication to the book, right? That like my dad went on strike when I was a baby. I wasn't 1 year old. My parents had bought this house in this nice neighborhood and my dad's union is going on strike. And like, and they're going on strike thinking that every transportation union in the country is going to join them. And those unions all back down. And my father's union was like, yeah, well, we're still going on strike. And my father was not about to be a scab. He's not crossing a picket line. That's not my father. He's not going to do something like that. That's dishonorable. whatever the merits of the dispute they had, you know. I'm not endorsing the cause of the strike, mind you. He says, well, that's dishonorable. I would be betraying my union brothers to cross that picket line. I'm not going to do it. So he loses his job, and that begins a whole nightmare story for my family. After that, you know, during that, he puts my brother and my mother, and then with this baby on the way, crashes his motorcycle, breaks his hip. And what did he do? He puts a lawnmower in the back of his two-door coupe and starts mowing other people's lawns. And he goes to school, and he works around the clock, and I hardly ever see my father when I'm a kid because he's working all the time. And I can't remember one time that that guy said, my life sucks, woe is me. I don't remember him ever saying that. Maybe he said it to my mother. I don't know. My mother never did that. And they had probably as much reason as any of you do to complain, you know. If you've got something on your chest, you just got to get it out, fine. But, like, if you make that your lifestyle, if you do that, like I'm seeing from that guy that I'm referencing and too many other people, you know, you're not just hurting yourself. You are hurting yourself tremendously, okay? But you are dragging other people down with you, and you need to stop doing it. It's not helpful to you. It's not helpful to anybody else. You're creating the circumstances. You're creating precisely the circumstances that you are complaining about. You're manifesting that into your reality, and that's a very real thing. Caller, you're on Surreal Politics. What can I do for you?
Hey, Chris. I almost feel bad calling in because that, you know, last like few minutes that you were talking was like excellent. It would have been a great way to end the show, so I'm sorry for that. But
that's okay.
The last caller really, the last call, I can't get in his headspace, and I do see, you know, the person you're referencing, and then others. I've seen a lot of people kind of talk this way. And it's just never been my lived experience. And I don't know, is this just like a symptom of like the online spaces that we're occupying? Or is this like a pervasive issue that's like growing, you know, generally across society? Or is it a personality type and it's always been there? I'm just kind of curious to pick your brain about that. Because
I think that it's a combination
of
things.
Very strange every time I hear it.
It's a combination of things, okay? I don't get from the guy who I was just talking to, you know, that he's in a similar boat to the subject of my animation, say, okay? He's got a different category of thing going on, and I did not probe him enough to fully understand it. But, like, you know, he does not come off to me as the kind of guy who's complaining. He's hearing the complaints of other people, and they're actually discouraging him is what I perceive, okay? He's met with, you know, the genuine difficulties of modernity, and he's looking for answers, and what he's hearing is a bunch of people screaming that the sky is falling, and he's like, you know, it's difficult to argue with what these people are saying, I think is what I get from him. And I hope he'll call in again, not tonight, but another time if I'm misinterpreting. Now, you know, the other people who are putting those ideas in people's heads, you know, they have a diversity of motives, I think, fair to say. But, you know, if those people who are, they first of all don't understand how other people perceive them, right? So, like, if you're screaming and complaining that you're lonely, and that continues to be the case, the fact that you're screaming and complaining that you're lonely obviously has something to do with your loneliness. And if you're incapable of understanding that, then you lack the theory of mind to have a social life, right? Like, you have to be able to think about how you are perceived by others. You have to put yourself in other people's heads. And you have to think about how you look. And if you have ever looked at somebody who's miserable and unhappy and tried to make a decision as to whether or not you want to spend time with them, this is not difficult to figure out. You know, some of these people just simply lack theory of mind. You know, that's the idea of, like, you know, thinking about another person's thoughts. And, you know, that's a symptom of autism. Okay, so there's a lot of that in these circles. That's definitely the case. And I suspect that the person that animates so much of my annoyance lately is somebody who's like, you know, he's Asperger's or whatever. And whether that's, you know, there's debate about whether that's autism spectrum disorder or whatever, but, you know, he obviously lacks the social intuition of a person born with all the natural faculties of a healthy adult, right? And I don't think that individual is ever going to learn those things. I think that he's probably congenitally incapable of that. And that for that reason, anybody who doesn't have that problem, who's listening to him, is getting very bad advice, you know? And so, like, that guy needs to be discounted, shunned, and, like, unwelcomed everywhere. And, like, he cannot be allowed to, you know, to portray himself in a credible way as having anything to do with our political movement. That guy doesn't belong. If you can't get one woman into your bed in the entire United States of America, then, like, you are not supposed to tell us how to govern a country. You know, it's completely preposterous. And so, you know, that's my little rant on it. I don't know how responsive it is to your point.
Well, I mean, so it sounds like from the way you're describing it is, like, number one, this is like a normal human archetype, like the type of person who can't think how other people perceive him, right? And then it's maybe being amplified by these people getting voices within like a certain segment of the internet, let's say, and then that's perpetuating that mindset across people that may otherwise not normally have felt that way. Is that pretty much kind of what you said?
Yeah, and here's another thing that's conspicuous about it, okay? Jason Kessler has not been platformed banned from Telegram, okay? He's available on your Apple device. He's available on your Google Play Store Telegram app, all right? There's a reason for that, okay? The people who are damaging
because
us...
Because he's a liberal.
It's because he's not harming the powers that be. They understand that, okay? And so, like, whatever, you know, one of these days we're going to figure out who's been financing Jason Kessler, all right? And it's not him working really hard at a moving company. I guarantee you that. If he thinks that he's going to move to South America and go get himself an obedient Latina sex slave and call her his wife, the reason that he's able to travel the country and spend months writing books that only his enemies will read is because somebody is paying him to do that. And, you know, that whoever's paying for that is somebody who doesn't have our best interests at heart. So, like, you know, that's the discernment I think that needs to be made. It's like whether, and that doesn't mean that Jason Kessler is intentionally being a shill or whatever. You know, I told somebody on Twitter recently, if you use the word shill, you are one, okay? But, like, somebody wants Jason Kessler to be heard, and it's not because they have our best interests at heart. You know, that's the conclusion I'm just fundamentally reaching.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, it takes up so much time and energy, even just refuting this constantly in like different chat rooms or even like when you take calls, you got to constantly beat it down. I mean, but it's, you know, important to do. But it's just, you know, like I'm in my early to mid 30s and I've been in all ranges of, I would say I'm like an okay looking guy. I'm not like the most handsome guy in the world. I'm not ugly. I'm not fat. I'm not, you know, the most muscular guy in the world. But like I've been in all like points of success and failure in my life, you know, like, you know, I've been jobless, I've had really good jobs, you know, I've been all across the spectrum. And no matter what station I was in or what phase of my life I was in, it was not hard to, like, if you just were going outside and doing things, like, you come across women, like, you know, you start a conversation with a couple of them, you know, you're gonna date women. Like, it's not really that hard if you just are like a normal person. And that's why it's so strange when I hear these people talking about like, oh, I want a girlfriend so bad and I try so hard and it just never happens. And I'm so dejected. I'm going to move to like, you know, Brazil. It's like you said, I mean, there's definitely a nefarious aspect to it and something else is going on where it's just like starting to grow. And it's like, really, I don't think it's COVID. I think the last caller blamed COVID for turning everybody into an insult. I don't think any COVID had anything to do with it. There was actually a baby boom during COVID. So if anything, COVID had people having sex more. So,
well,
you know, I think it's
a
wild topic.
The valid point that he raised, and, you know, obviously I wasn't around to observe all of this, but, you know, I think that there was probably a, you know, while there was a baby boom, I'm told, during COVID, I imagine that it was largely between people who had already been together or they found each other on dating apps, okay? And so, like, you know, the dating apps are these, you know, toxic things, and you know, you have to utilize them if you're a single man to some extent, and you know, whatever. But like, the thing that I said to the guy is like, okay, people are complaining about not meeting nice white girls or not going to church every Sunday, And he responds with this, like, oh, so we're back to this Trump's, you know, gunslinging character. And I'm like, no, I'm just saying that that's where they are. And if you want to know, you've been informed. And if you don't care to show up, then that's your choice, you know. But, like, if people are, you know, I think that the COVID thing reduced the ability to meet people by happenstance, say, okay, like, what, you know, during a long period of being locked down. And, like, I think that a lot of people probably, I think a lot of the people in our movement were already this way, of course, because, you know, there's the extremely online phenomenon of this thing, which is like, you know, that they are internet people. Like, that's their life, is their whole entire persona is invested into a fictional character. And that's why they can afford to be like these crazy edgelords, because they're counting on not being doxxed and never being held accountable for their words, right? So, like, their entire life is invested in, you know, a screen name, and that's more important to them than the things that are outside of the door. And, like, that phenomenon is obviously not going to result in you meeting, you know, quality, attractive women who want to sleep with you, right? Much less have a family. Like, you're going to be completely cut off from every opportunity to meet people if that's the way you live your life. And if you try to take that persona, you got to try to take your edgy internet persona that doesn't care who it offends, and then you try to go to the places where the nice girls are, you're going to get chased out of those places. So, like, you know, we were the free speech advocates warned of this when they banned us from social media in 2017. They said, you ban them from social media, they're going to be cut off from people, they're going to be stuck in these radicalized echo chambers, you know, and their ideas are going to get worse, not better. Now, you know, say what we will about, you know, radicalized echo chambers and their merits, the thing that is certain is that if you don't leave them once in a while, that, like, you know, you're going to get detached from your fellow man. You're not going to be able to have relationships with him. And if you are completely different from the other people of your society, then, you know, your social life is going to suffer. You're going to be limited to the interactions of that radicalized echo chamber. And we know, not without cause, that there's a dearth of, you know, women in those circles. So you have to, if you want to breed, if you want to reproduce, if you want to keep your race alive, you're just going to have to, like, go deal with modernity, guy. And, you know, some people are not prepared to do that, sadly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the last caller was talking about how it was easier to find a Latina girlfriend or whatever. And it's like, well, I mean, if going to church on Sunday is too difficult for you, I mean, you don't really have, it's not really a priority, right? I mean, you don't even have to go to church. Like, if you're really not into that, I met my wife at school, you know, we were taking the same class. We started talking to each other, you know, and, like, yeah, you know, I can already hear the refrain from people going, oh, everybody in college is a whore. And it's like, yeah, there's whores in college, but there's also normal people too. And if you just talk to them and you find somebody that's not a terrible person, it's not that hard to do. You just got to put yourself out there, talk to somebody, you know, it doesn't even have to be like you're hitting on them. You can just literally start talking to them about the class you're in or anything else that you might be doing. You know, there's a million things that you could be doing. So, I mean, I don't get it, but I'm really glad that you push back on this in the way you do, because I think you put it very plainly. You make great sense, and it's not really anything that, like, a rational person can argue with. And I think everybody listening to your show that hears you have these kind of interactions really, you know, gets good advice out of it and sees that, like, going down the Kessler path is not the way to go. So thank you for that service, Chris.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, buddy. Thanks for a great call, as usual, my friend. Caller, you're on Surreal Politics. What can I do for you?
Hey, Chris. I have a couple of requests. I wish you could review and do a commentary on the Douglas McGregor rebuttal to the Biden speech the other night. Douglas McGregor, he's a...
I know who Douglas McGregor is. Douglas McGregor, he's been a frequent guest on Tucker Carlson. I read his book, what was the title of the book that I read. I think he's got more than one out there, but he had this book about, like, a number of battles that changed the history of warfare. And
Margin of Victory.
Margin of Victory. That's the title. Thank you, my friend. Yeah, I read that book in prison. So he's an interesting guy.
Have you seen his video this week? He did release a rebuttal of the Biden speech the other night.
I have not seen that yet.
Dark.
I will definitely watch it. I'm glad that you made me aware of it. I will definitely watch that video. And
and the other,
go ahead.
All right, the second thing I thought was the Tucker Chris Cuomo interview, and I was wondering, it should be the Tucker Cuomo Cantwell thing. You could definitely do a good number on that. I haven't watched it yet, but
so who interviewed who in Tucker Cuomo?
Tucker had Chris Cuomo up to his cabin or whatever, wherever he's doing his interview.
That's very interesting. No, I haven't seen that yet either. You know, Tucker Carlson, I was like, it was like the most important part of my day to catch the Tucker Carlson show the whole time I was locked up. When I got out, I was like, oh, I'm going to get a big old TV. I'm not going to have to fight nobody for it. I'm going to watch Tucker Carlson in peace. And then Fox News fired him. And I watched like the first 10 episodes of Tucker on Twitter. And right. I kind of like fell off after that. I haven't watched a whole lot of it. But I appreciate you bringing those two things to my attention, because those are very worthwhile, obviously.
Cool. Yeah, I just thought it would be a good trajectory or something to do. But I'd like to also say I saw Callahan in the chat, and hail Callahan, and hail Mr. Waitubber.
All right, man.
Good night, Chris.
Thank you very much, my friend. Thank you very much for the call. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to this live, uncensored, and entirely unscripted episode of Surreal Politiques. I do have the most mildest of regrets for not being able to finish my monologue today, but it worked out, I think. I had to stumble all over the place in the beginning, but I had some great calls to wrap the show up, and I'm very grateful for that. And, you know, going off on things unscripted, you know, that's what I do all the time behind the scenes anyway. It's good to have people to bounce things off of once in a while. So if you're listening on some other platform at some other time, I would invite you to join us for the live program. We do this every Monday, 9:30 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time on Odyssey, on Rumble, on the Get Me Radio app for your smartphone, Fire TV, or Roku. Real easy to get hold of us. What else do I want to say? Become a Surreal Politiques member at surrealpolitiques.com/join. For $10 a month, usually. Oh, my God, Keck App is back. And he sent me $100. He says, hail, Chris, great show and insight you put out tonight. Well, thank you so much. I missed Keck App. It's good to see you again, my friend. And thank you very much for the C-note. That's very helpful. If you would like to throw $100 at me, or, you know, some smaller amount, there's a lot of ways for you to do that. I got Cash App. It's probably the easiest way. You just send me some money on the Cash App thing. It's Edgy Chris is my cash tag. And you can also go to givesendgo.com/SPM, and you can donate with your credit or debit card or bank account over there. You can make it a recurring donation. That'd be fantastic. You know, I'm thinking of, Keck App's definitely going to be in there. My heavy 100 group or something. If you're going to give me $100 or more every month, I would be very interested in, you know, knowing how I could motivate you to do that, friend. So why don't you send me an email, christophercantwell.net/contact. I'm a real easy guy to get a hold of, even when I'm not on the air. I'm notoriously easy to talk to. This is why it's difficult to motivate people to help me out. You know, I just make myself too readily available. You know, these Substack bloggers are like, hey, if you give me $50 a month, I'll get on the phone with you once a month. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Here's my cell phone number. But anyway, you know, you get the idea. I guess the moral of the story is F you pay me. There's a lot of ways to do it. I do the cryptocurrency thing. All you Bitcoin guys, you're rich now. It just hit $72,000. It's time to stop with the hodl and get on with the giving to Chris. It doesn't rhyme, but it's, you know, it's a gimmick. And once you've done that, then I will promptly turn it into Federal Reserve notes and pay bills with it, because that's what I need to do. So thank you very much for tuning in to this live airing of Surreal Politiques. I have that monologue that I prepared today, or started to prepare today. I will finish it. I'll either do it Monday, or I will aspire to just release it separately so that I'm not repeating myself ad nauseum week after week. I'll try to move on to something other than people whining on the internet by Monday. And that'll be my aspirational goal, because I don't want to become that guy. You know, what if I just became the guy who's like complaining about the people who are complaining? That's a bunch of nonsense. We can't do that forever, okay? So I'll try to get it done before Monday, and we'll talk about something decidedly more uplifting by the time we get back here next week. We'll be back here Wednesday for the member show, of course. And Friday, Cursing Up a Storm on the Uncensored production. And if you want to catch the back episodes, well, now you got the first 50. That'll keep you busy for a little while. Outlaw Conservative? Not as bad as I thought it was. Pretty good. Check it out.